From the campus of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to WSSU Future Focus. Everything Winston-Salem State University. And now your host, WSSU Chancellor Elwood Robinson.
Hello, and welcome to Future Focus Now, where we will explore issues of community, research, women's empowerment, HBCU campuses, with three amazing leaders on the Winston-Salem State University campus. Kara Davis currently serves as Special Assistant to the Chancellor for Community Economic Development and S.G. Atkins Community Development Corporation. She's an attorney, a business mentor, a real estate developer, who has collaborated with local, state, and federal partners to access $10 million in investment for impactful community economic development in East Winston-Salem. She is on a mission for equity and social justice that will increase affordable housing, entrepreneur and job opportunities, and sustainable businesses. Under her leadership, the Simon Green Atkins Community Development Corporation obtains federal, state, local grants, builds homes for first-time homebuyers, provides technical assistance to entrepreneurs, has facilitated three master plans, helped volunteers sustain a community garden, and opened Forsyth County's first shared-use kitchen. In 2010, she led the Atkins CDC to purchase and transform a 40,000-square-foot building in an enterprise center, a hub for community engagement, for business incubation, for entrepreneurs, nonprofit. The incubator is home to 43 entrepreneurs and full-service event center that employs neighborhood residents. My next guest, Dr. Tamara Thomas, is an associate professor in WSSU School of Health Sciences. She teaches within the Department of Rehabilitation Counseling. She's a program coordinator for Rehabilitation and Human Service undergraduate program. Her teaching and research activities have focused on issues of rehabilitation counseling, mental health counseling, and co-occurring disorders, gender-specific treatments, program development and supervision, evaluation, management, ethics, and vocational counseling evaluation. Dr. Thomas is a licensed mental health associate in North Carolina. Her professional activities are extensive as rehabilitation counselor, counselor, educator, practitioner, and administrator. My last guest is Dr. Erwin Lynch, is Associate Provost for Scholarship, Research, and Innovation at WSSU. Dr. Lynch's research area is strategic planning and program development. Her work is in educational assessment, program evaluation, and campus climate research. She has been an invited presenter and trainer in the area of program development for the retention of underrepresented minority faculty in the academic setting, as well as trainer for strategic planning applications in a nonprofit setting. As a researcher, she has been funded in intervention development for targeted populations, specifically underrepresented minority groups and adult learners. And her research in campus climate and URM retention has resulted in the development of a standardized advising manual and online resource guide for advising low-income and adult learners. She's produced over 486 million in proposals. She's published in the topics of leadership, innovation, management, and instructional design. In her role as Associate Provost of Scholarship, Research, and Innovation at WSSU, she cultivates research and scholarly activities for faculty and staff to enhance the educational experience of our students. In this role, she has aided university faculty in developing three funded centers and a 97% growth in new awards. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Future Focus. I am just excited to have you with us tonight. An incredible guest list, three amazing individuals who are doing great work in terms of research and service. Welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us and being a guest on Future Focus.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Be here.
Everybody okay tonight? Everybody's Dr. Thomas, you fine? I know before the show began, you said you know, it's a little late for you.
It is.
Are you ready?
It is. But I'm energized nonetheless. Happy to be here.
We're glad to have you. We're going to talk about some exciting research that you're doing. You just got an amazingly funded grant, something like $3.5 million. I know I didn't get it right. It's probably close.
3.7.
See, I knew Dr. Lynch would correct me because, you know, that's our area. She keeps track of that. She'd tell me exactly to the penny how many research dollars we have. Thank you, Dr. Lynch, for being with us tonight as well. And then we have Ms. Carol Davis, who is over our Community Development Corporation. And we'll talk a lot about that in just a minute. Carol, you okay? You fine?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Good. You ready to go?
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. It's going to be a great show tonight. I wanted to frame the conversation tonight around the importance primarily of HBCUs and the work that we do in the community and how much of the work that we do on our campus is related to community growth and trying to make sure that we can uplift all of our citizens in the area. We are a true community university. And so I want to talk a little bit about research. Dr. Lynch, you have been at the university now for how long?
18 months.
So you're in your second year. You came here and you began to look at the research that was being done. And so give us a sense of the research enterprise at Winston-Salem State University. I talk to people, and oftentimes when people think about Winston-Salem State University, they think, you know, we were certainly historically a teaching university. They think about our nursing and they think about, you know, our health sciences department. That's what they think about. Sometimes they forget about the tremendous amount of research that's being done by our faculty at Winston-Salem State. Give our listeners a little bit about the research enterprise on our campus.
Absolutely. So they're well within their rights to have those thoughts, because with that strong, effective teaching comes strong research. The two things are completely integrated. So what we are doing in the classrooms, so our research infrastructure, as of today, we have a $68 million portfolio, Chancellor Robinson. So we need to update our website, but we are officially at a $68 million portfolio. We have a total of 82 active projects right now, which supports approximately 500 students, about 15 to 20% of our faculty, just faculty, are engaged. We also have staff who are engaged in our research infrastructure. And so we are doing things that are community-based research. We are doing basic and applied and clinical research. You know, we are funded by a number of agencies. The diversity of our portfolio is beautiful. So we are funded by NSF, we are funded by NIH, we are funded by SAMHSA, which is Dr. Thomas's grant, funded by SBA, you know, Attorney Davis's grant. We have foundational funding that allows us to do research. Our CSUM Center is funded through the Thurgood Marshall College Foundation. So we have a number of projects that are going across campus that speak to who we are as an institution and what we do in our community. And so as people think of us in a certain way, we are breaking those boundaries for them to also realize to be good teachers, we have to be good researchers. Because what we teach our students, whether it's in the clinical setting for the School of Health Sciences or in our quantitative labs for human and performance labs, we are teaching those students research-based strategies and skills through the projects that we're doing to then take into their careers. So those things go hand in hand. Good teaching and research goes hand in hand. And so for the institutions who, you know, are a little nervous about encroaching upon, you know, research, you have to, because that's just what makes you a better, more effective instructor. So our research infrastructure is very strong and rising, of course. So as you mentioned in our intros, we had a 97% growth last year. We rounded out about 27.9 million in new awards. And right now, as of February, we're at 25, and we haven't even finished the year yet. So our faculty and staff are doing phenomenal, phenomenal work. We've got great work coming out of Student Affairs, School of Health Sciences, and CASB, just phenomenal work all around.
That's tremendous, Dr. Lynch. I appreciate that. And I posted on my Facebook page that we had a research portfolio approaching 60 million. I was unaware that we have one. We are now at 68 million. That really speaks to the university, the strength of the faculty and the work that we're doing. if you could try to put that in perspective for our listeners, because, I mean, people say, well, you know, your university, you got 68 million, but there are research one universities that don't have that kind of, you know, activity.
Yeah, there are definitely. So the way the rankings work for this R1, R2, there's not really an R3. But in context, so R1 universities are the top tier. They're the ones that are considered highest research productivity. And so those universities have about $100 million a year that they are producing in new awards. They also have a few hundred research faculty. That's another criteria. They're producing at least 50 doctoral students a year to be able to get that status. So it's a combination of things to be able to get that Carnegie Research One status. R2, which is what we are, an emerging R2 institution is what I like to say. So a R2 institution is a moderately high research productivity level. And we've already surpassed the minimum amount that we need to hit for R2 status on our awards. And so our next phase in looking at that emerging R2 status is making sure we have really strong doctoral programs producing phenomenal, you know, practitioners, as well as increasing our research staff capacity. So those two criteria will help us to get to that research 2 status. There are only 11 R2 HBCUs in the country. There are no R1 HBCUs in the country. And so they just released the most recent results. So FAMU is number one in research productivity, followed by A&T, Morgan, and then Howard University. So we're right up there. We're getting right up there with them. So I'm really excited about how enthusiastic everyone has become about the importance of research and what it does, not just for the institution, but for our students and the community around us. And so we're working on it, Chancellor. We're working.
No, fantastic. I'm going to let you set the stage for our next two guests, because you sent me a notification about a couple amazing awards, and we're going to get to those awards because I want folks to hear about that great work that's going on. But you sent me one about having a new women's center, and then you sent me one just last week about an amazing new award. That's why we have Dr. Thomas, and then we have Attorney Carol Davis with us. Set the stage for us about those two awards, and then I'm going to have a quick conversation with the two of them.
Absolutely. So I really want to set the stage then with the women behind those awards, right? And so both of these women are so extremely talented in what they do in their field. Carol has a track record of awards. And so for her to just pop up, say, I want to do a women business, absolutely, Carol, we will do that, because she's been so successful in attaining those community-based grants to be able to support the work of the Enterprise Center. You know, she helped create that Enterprise Center with a $1.5 million award from SBA?
That was Department of Commerce EDA, 1.2, plus our HUD funds. So
she has a track record of being extremely successful in that area. And so we were pleased to be able to help cultivate that project so that we could be one of five. There are only five women business centers in the entire state of North Carolina, and Winston-Salem State has one of them. So we're extremely pleased about that. And Dr. Thomas, of course, Dr. Thomas has become our golden child for grants this year, because she has been awarded two multi-million dollar projects this year alone, and the 300,000 COVID research project she just finished. And what am I missing, Dr. Thomas?
CSIM.
And the CSIM fellowship grant that she started with. So all of this has helped to build. She started with, you know, our own internally funded, well, I guess it wasn't technically internally, but she started with our own CSIM funded project and just built her work to this massive portfolio that she's maintaining right now as an associate professor, which is phenomenal because she is not quite at full yet. And I think she's still up for tenure at some point, right?
Yeah, I got like 4 years left.
Now I understand, Dr. Thomas, why you have to get the bait early, because you know you've been working so hard over the past few years. Now it's time, you know, you got to get some rest. I appreciate that. Thank you, Dr. Ledge. We'll come back to you a bit a little bit later, but thanks for setting the stage. Let me move to Carol Davis, Attorney Davis, and the work that you're doing at the CDC. Carol, tell our listeners what a CDC is, and we'll get into the components in just a moment, and what you do as director of the CDC.
Okay, Chancellor. Well, the Atkins Community Development Corporation, as you know, named after the founder of Winston-Salem State University, who really originally developed this whole neighborhood, this whole area around the university campus, became the school and the residential area because of the growth of the university. And so what we were developed to do, created to do, was to try to redevelop some of that infrastructure that has gotten kind of old and neglected over time. And so community development corporations are typically nonprofits that are started by communities to be a catalyst for economic development. And that typically means housing, affordable housing. It means education in the community and leadership development. And it means small business development and job creation. So those are typically the things under the umbrella of community development corporations. And so I was blessed to join Atkins CDC. It'll be 20 years this summer. So I'm hiding my gray hairs over here, but, you know, 20 years. And then the Enterprise Center is 10 years old this year. So we're celebrating the 10-year anniversary of the Enterprise Center. But what's typical for CDCs, you know, we bought an old building, an old dilapidated building in the community that had become an eyesore, basically. And we were able to purchase it with funding from HUD and completely renovate it in three phases, where we have 45 offices for businesses, small businesses, entrepreneurs. We have conference space, we have the kitchen, we have a community garden, and we are now about to have the Small Business Administration Women Business Center. So each year we try to take steps forward with the CDC. You know, we've built homes, as you mentioned, 28 homes where we help families into home ownership. And these are the kinds of things that help to close the wealth gap. You and I have talked about the wealth gap and, you know, some of the things that we can do to play a role in closing that gap. So ownership is key. Right. And so we have built homes for home ownership, not for rental, but for home ownership. We have helped entrepreneurs start and grow businesses. And, you know, we've had challenges with that during COVID, but I must say that the entrepreneurs are persistent and talented, resilient, creative people. And, you know, we have folks in the health industry. We have folks in the food industry, real estate, just a variety of people who are talented and growing their businesses. And so every chance that I get to bring resources through the university to assist with what's going on in the community, I mean, that's always needed and it's appreciated. And we just want to continue to do more of that work.
Yeah. So one of the things, Carol, that you mentioned in terms of the Enterprise Center, and now you have small businesses there, the renovation of that facility in terms of where it was located. I remember having a conversation with you a while back, and you said when you went down this road, people were saying that people wouldn't come to the Enterprise Center and people wouldn't have their businesses in an Enterprise Center. It is a first-rate, first-class facility where folks can have their businesses there. Talk about getting to where we are today with the Enterprise Center.
Right. Well, I'll start by saying, you know, it was a building that we purchased in the neighborhood for about $400,000, and now it's worth, you know, $4.5 million. So, you know, it has appreciated in value from our investment that came through the university. And then we have, from the first day we opened, people were coming in, you know, what is this? What's going on here? I need an office space. And people said that there was no market for office space on Martin Luther King. And we have proven that wrong. So we opened in June and we were full with our first 20 offices by September when we had our ribbon cutting. And then from there, we've just grown to finish the first, second, and third phase of the renovation. And we stay, you know, sometimes we are 100% occupied and, you know, sometimes we drop a few people and more come in. So we maintain near 100% occupancy all of the time. And we just try to be a resource. We have and encourage the entrepreneurs in the area. You know, before COVID, we used to have our monthly lunch and learns where all the entrepreneurs would come together and I'd have lunch and, you know, we would network and they would share what was going on with their business and give each other referrals. And then as COVID has come, we didn't close, never closed for a day because these entrepreneurs still need access to their offices and they're strategizing about how to continue to do business. And so now what we've been doing is having what we call our Friday Zoom at noon. And we get on Zoom and people log on and we have conversations and talk about, you know, how people have been impacted by COVID. You know, what has it meant for them personally? What does it mean for their business? And then we focus on sharing resources. And a lot of opportunities have come about for grants, for local grants, state grants, and federal grants to assist businesses with staying open during these times. But having the Enterprise Center as a community there, community hub, and a place for this network to encourage each other and to strategize about future success is very valuable.
Yeah. I remember, you know, looking at all the amazing things that are happening at the Enterprise Center. And one of the things that jumped out at me was the fact that we built over 28 homes for first-time buyers. You mentioned the whole idea of closing the wealth gap. That's important for Winston-Salem State University. It's important for our community to be able to do that. The way in which you began to close the wealth gap is by doing a couple things. One, home ownership is important because if you have home ownership, you can build equity, you can do a lot of things. And then developing businesses is important. We know, for example, during 2020, during the pandemic, over 40% of Black businesses have failed. And we know that those businesses are not going to come back. And so I think Winston-Salem State has to take a leadership role in helping folks with home ownership, developing businesses, and that's what you're doing with the CDC and the Enterprise Center. You've got to be pleased with the 28 homes. That's special. That's unique. Talk just a little bit about that. I'm going to come back to the Women's Center in just a minute, but talk to a little bit about the building of those homes and you know you shared with me the joy that families have, and you shared pictures with me of the new home. So just talk a little bit about that.
Right. Well, that work's been very rewarding, very, very much so. And I'd be remiss if I don't mention our partners at the City of Winston-Salem. We worked closely with the Community Development Department at the City of Winston-Salem. And for most of these homes, they have provided our construction loans to help us get these homes built. And then we bring our buyers to the table, and there's some nonprofit agencies in Winston-Salem that help us get these buyers trained about what it means to be a home buyer and how you go through the process of establishing credit, looking at your credit report, examining your budget to determine, you know, what kind of house you can afford, and then what those payments are going to be so that you don't overcommit and buy more house than you can afford. But we have worked with a builder who was a graduate of Winston-Salem State University, and Mr. Bill Cruz with Phase 4 Construction. He has done an immaculate job building quality homes in the neighborhoods where we've worked. And I can't say enough about the quality of his work. Even though these are first-time home buyers, and for some, it may be the only home they ever purchase. and he makes them to last. So I have nothing but good things to say about Mr. Cruz. And people move into these homes. We make sure that they work with, you know, good mortgage companies and banks. They get mortgages from regular mainstream Wells Fargo, BB&T, State Employees Credit Union, Bank of America. They put down about a $1,500 down payment, and then we're able to get resources from some of our local partners to assist them with more down payment based on their income levels. And then we, you know, in these last homes, we put in stainless steel appliances, and the last house we did had a kitchen island, and, you know, we put in the ceiling fans and the vaulted ceilings, and, you know, our buyers are just thrilled. And washers and dryers, we put everything, all the appliances are in there. And, you know, one of our last houses, when the buyer, she found out, she's probably, I don't know her age exactly, but I'll say she was 60, you know, and this was the first home she'd ever purchased. She'd been renting her whole life. And when she discovered that those appliances were going to be in there and the washer and dryer, she said, can I shout? Can we shout? I just want to shout. And so we had church right there, you know, right outside her laundry room in the house, because she was just so excited. But these are the things that we get a chance to do. And it's just great, very rewarding. And 28 homes, and we've got more to come. Yes.
Yeah, that's indeed special. Dr. Thomas, we can't leave you out. I mean, you're here with us. Tell us a little bit about your time at Winston-Salem State University, and a little bit about you, your research, before we get into the major grant that you just got. And Dr. Lynch certainly gave you a major shout out and plug. I think she's
grateful.
A huge champion. I mean, for you. So talk to us a little bit about you as a professor at Winston-Salem State, what this all means.
Okay, so I started at Winston-Salem in the undergraduate rehabilitation undergraduate program in 2013. And I tell you, it has been an amazing journey. I came from the University of Iowa. And so I really wanted to come and teach at an HBCU. I never attended an HBCU. I just felt like I needed to take this research one education and bring it to the HBCU. So one thing I found out is that I had a lot to learn. I thought I was coming here to just bestow all of this knowledge upon the students, and the students taught me a thing or two. First thing, pedagogy, change it. You know? And so it's been an amazing journey in the sense that, you know, I've had the opportunity to work very closely with students and build alliances with students. And I had never experienced that in previous institutions. So that was a new thing. And I also was able to really play to my strengths, because before I came to the academia, I was out in the community working in agencies and program development and management. So when I came, I was able to utilize those same skills in an administrative sense, because I became program coordinator shortly thereafter. And so I had to balance those two hats, so to speak. And I think it really just really kept everything sharp as I matriculated, and then basically narrowed down my research interest, because I was so interested in so many things. But what has stood the test of time is that I've always been interested in maintaining my connection to the community and the needs of the community. So my focus has always been on providing service to individuals who have been disenfranchised or considered vulnerable populations. So specifically individuals who have mental health issues, individuals who have disabilities. That's been a major part of my journey. Many people don't realize that when we talk about minority populations, it's people with disabilities that are actually the largest minority population that exists. And no one seems to be aware of that. So I said that when we think about minorities, it never occurs to us that people with disabilities, they are actually the largest minority group that exists. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when you think about that, it's, that's pretty staggering. Yep. You know, it's easier to think of race or sexual orientation or all of those obvious things. But when we really think about it, an overlooked group are those with disabilities. So a lot of my focus has really been on providing services to people out of that population and really attending to their needs, whether it be in the correctional setting. I worked in the correctional setting. It's just, I'm drawn to that so-called underdog. So I think that's what motivates me the most in terms of the research that I go after, the grants that I'm interested in. And I have to say, our office's sponsored programs, boy, they know how to dangle a carrot. I mean, they are diligent about sending announcements out. They'll reach out, Erin, to get on the phone. She'll start spinning it. Think you can make you believe you can do it all, you know. But because of that diligence, it keeps that whistle wet, so to speak, you know. And I desire to, you know, to pursue. And I have to say, I've had great partnerships. I've had a great partnership with Dr. Rogers. We went after the CSIM fellowship together, and then that snowballed. And I've had the support of my department chair and the dean and different ones. It just takes so many people, the support of staff, to make everything flow. There is no secret sauce other than being motivated, commitment, fortitude, and just working collectively to go after, you know, the big cookie, I suppose, you know. So right. It's been quite a journey.
That's impressive, and I love the way you framed how it takes, you know, more than one person. It takes you know, many people to do the kind of research that needs to be done. It's not just one individual. One of the things that I like about your recent grant, and it is a center grant. And Dr. Lynch, if you would talk just a minute about the importance of that model and why a center grant is so important, you know, almost as a concept, as an idea, because it brings in so many people. I'd love for you to talk about that.
Absolutely. So we have 11 centers on campus, which is up from 8 in 2019. And our centers have multiple functions. Dr. Thomas's grant is a service and research center. And so her center will literally be serving members of the community who have disabilities and drug and alcohol addictions. It will be a mental health service facility. And so the work that is coming out of that center will be providing direct services to people, but then also producing research to improve the field. And so the work of the centers, it really varies based on the function. CSIM is doing the same, very similar type of work. CSIM is looking at how can we do research and use research to guide and lead policy? How can we put strategies, economic strategies in place that will authentically support economic mobility through the research that we're doing, right? Our Center for the Excellence of Elimination of Health Disparities, also a research-driven service center. And so it is looking at how do we create interventions for people of color to decrease health disparities regionally and then eventually nationally when we get the big funding. So our centers are doing some phenomenal work. Our Center for the Applied Data Sciences, the $1.5 million one we just got last year. So that was actually our first big center grant after CSIM recently in modern time right now. Yeah. And so that center, the Center for Applied Data Sciences, supports 5 research fellows in 5 different disciplines. They're not all computer science people.
Right.
So we have healthcare management doing work in that center. We have biotechnology researchers doing work in that center. And how do we use big data sets to lead the research in multiple fields? So this is the work that the centers are doing. So centers are important for our institution because they help us to put forward research that makes authentic changes, whether that's at the local government level, whether that's in our disciplines, in our fields, and whether that's, you know, regulations for individuals. So So our centers are extremely important to who we are as an institution and what we're doing to be able to serve our community and our national populations.
All right, so let's take a look at a couple of these centers, and that's why I have Dr. Thomas and also Carol Davis on tonight. Dr. Thomas, tell us about the evolution of getting to, you know, putting this all together, writing the grant, submitting the grant. Take us through that process, and then tell us about the center itself, because I have the name here, and it's one of the longest names I've seen. It is Winston-Salem State University Behavioral and Health Community Support Unit. I'm not gonna say that again, but take us through the evolution of getting to writing the grant.
Okay, so there was a announcement that was sent out by sponsored programs regarding the particular grant. And I'm always looking for grants that really play to my background. And so the grant came up and Aaron and I and Keith got together to talk about the grant and how and who and what was going to happen. The approach with sponsored programs was different than I had experienced in the past. I started writing grants in 2014. I made my first attempt at writing a grant, and I took copious notes on how much time it took me to write the grant. It took 90 clock hours for me to write the grant. Amazing that I wouldn't know that, but I needed to know. And 90 clock hours, I looked at the grant and I said, you know what, this is good. Oh girl, yes, you've done that. And so I send it up and it goes out and it was a blow because I didn't get funded. And I just really didn't understand. And one of the reasons was because I wasn't a tribal university. So that was a hard lesson for me, the first hard lesson, knowing that you actually qualify, you meet the qualifications for certain grants, you know. Very elementary and hard lesson to learn with 90 clock hours. So I was very diligent and planning at Aaron's door and making sure that, you know, can this be done? The difference that I noticed this time around after several grants was that I call Aaron the dot connector. So she begins to connect dots. Secretly behind closed door, I say the puppet master. And so she knows who to connect and who has overlapping work and who has interest in how you can leverage those relationships across campus. And so that was a different approach. And, you know, what I noticed about that approach is that you can't be territorial, you know, and I don't know if that's the culture on campuses or even if it's the culture here, I have no idea. But you have to refrain from being territorial about certain grants. That's my grant, you know. I don't want to, and that can be hard when you feel like you're passionate about a certain grant. And so that was a difference. So I was able to form collaborative relationships that were interdisciplinary that really complemented the overall goal and the focus of the grant. And so we just really commenced the writing and checking in, and Aaron gave input as well, and strategies, the best approaches to certain aspects of the grant. And so, you know, remaining open to that feedback and just really, really being humble about it, because at the end of the day, what matters most is that the community served, our students are served, and we're able to give back in meaningful ways across campus, across the community, regionally, and yes, even nationally. So that process was different from what I had ever, you know, participated in before. But I liked it. You know why? Because I felt supported. I felt like I belonged to a team. I felt like I was being rooted for. I felt like that others were on the same page with me. And that lent itself to a certain comfortability as well as a determination to make it happen. And the caveat is that I actually like writing grants. As weird as that is, I enjoy it. It's just program development to me. So I get to practice that thing while bringing in, you know, funds for the university.
Oh, that's great. Look, that's great. Tell us about when you were, how were you notified? And tell me about when you found out that you had actually won the award, because, you know, I've been in this business for a long time and I know what that feels like. I'm just curious as to when you, how you were notified.
Okay. Well, first of all, they initially sent some type of email out like 3 weeks prior to asking, can you still do this? So, of course, I got in touch with Erin. I said, can we still do this? She said, yeah, we can still do this. And I, you know, so we did the paperwork that was needed to confirm that we were still game to do the grant. And so I kind of laid it to rest and I thought that I had not even received the award. Then I got up that morning. I get up very early in the morning. And so I checked my email late for some reason, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, I'm checking my email. And there is a notice, the NOA, that's what it said, NOA. And I was like, what is this? 12:30 a.m., who's sending me NOA? Which I'm like, real talk, I didn't even know what an NOA was. I just notice of award, okay? So, you know, when you don't get them, you just don't know. So I basically looked at it and I read it. And I said, is this what I think it is? So I contacted Erin. I said, did you see this? Is this what it, you know, is it? And then I contacted Dr. Edwards, our chair. I was like, I'm going to send this over. Is this what I think it is? And lo and behold, I found out I couldn't believe it. So to be real honest, I got sick to my stomach. And I got scared as I don't know what I'm like, oh God, this is, oh Lord, I just felt so overwhelmed because, you know, I've been competing like very hard. 2020, I wrote so many grants, people were going on spring break. There was nobody for this particular grant. Everybody had left the building. The Anderson Center was dismally dark and creepy. And it was just sponsor programs and me in there during that time. And it seemed like it would be an impossible feat, and that, okay, here's another one I'm putting out and it's not going to happen, but it did.
Get the notice of award and it's $3.7
million? $3.7 million and some change.
$3.7 million and some change. Were you close to what Carol talked about with the lady who went into her new house and saw the new appliances? Did you read that? And then did you want to have sort of a, you know, kind of a shouting? Did you want
to? Yes, so much so that I had, no one was in the house but my mother, and she has dementia, but I explained the whole thing to her, knowing that she was going to forget this thing in about 2 minutes. But it didn't matter, because in that moment, she was able to say, well, congratulations, baby, look at God. Yeah. You see what the Lord will do? And that was our moment, and it meant the world to me. So yeah, absolutely, yeah. I was just ecstatic. And just
Brad, one more thing about her center. Her center hires 15 people.
I saw that.
This is what we're talking about, the adding back to the community. These are jobs. So we will hire 8 students, full-time center director, full-time admin assistant, full-time 4 postdocs.
Yeah.
4 postdoc researchers. So remember I was talking about those research staff numbers that we need to get to the R2 status? We need 50 of them. That's what we need. We need 50. And that's 4 right there on this one center. So this center is phenomenal. And what's
that is fantastic. So tell us about the center. I'm not going to repeat the name. So tell us quickly about the center.
What the center is the whole goal is to be able to address the needs of people with serious mental illness and who have substance use disorders and other drug and alcohol issues. The center will also provide services to people who need vocational rehabilitation, specifically veterans, women and men within the community. We're able to provide career inventories, personalities, all those different assessments that will help people to hone in on careers that they are interested in. We're interested in not just ensuring that people have jobs, but that folks have access to careers, and giving them the appropriate guidance that they're needing. The other aspect that's a huge aspect of the center is that there's going to be the utilization of the mobile unit. So once upon a time, the mobile unit We have focused on health related issues, but now we have that behavioral health component added in there. So we're able to provide HIV tests and hepatitis C tests for individuals, because there's a high number of folks who have these conditions and they're not even aware of it. And there is a high number of individuals who have substance use disorders who have Hep C and they're not even aware that they have them. So whereas there's inability for people in rural areas like Surrey, Randolph, and Forsyth to access these types of treatments, people oftentimes think that, you know, access to mental health assessment is something that is everybody's privilege, but it's not. People are not able to access these types of ad hoc services, so to speak, if they're not insured. So I'm very pleased that we're living in a time where mental health is at an all-time high, and people are going crazy. Not literally, they are really experiencing mental health crises, and nobody, we're not attending to it in the way that we should. So I believe that with the use of the mobile unit and with the use of the personnel and the faculty and professionals that we have here on campus, we'll be able to provide those services to people who are at risk, and we'll be able to do it at no cost to them. And we'll be able to access these areas that are typically forgotten and make it a bit more convenient. And in terms of that, we also have the ability to connect the dots and give warm handovers to partnering agencies who partner with us to help provide these services for individuals and pretty much provide an integrative approach to treatment services that are more wraparound and comprehensive in nature. So that is, and the other thing is that we all have a 24-hour crisis hotline.
Oh, my goodness.
So individuals will be able to access services via the phone, and they'll be able to, you know, receive help if they're in the event that they're in a crisis. And that's really something new that we haven't had, and I'm excited about that. This will be a great opportunity for students to participate, because, you know, oftentimes we have allied health professionals, we have social work department, we have all kinds of departments that really attend to the needs of people. They provide human services, but in this climate, we have an inability to help people negotiate crisis. So we have experienced through this time how mental health issues and crisis situations have been criminalized. So if you do have a resource out there where you can alleviate some of that crisis, those situations that you may incur, and you can actually reach out to someone who can help you, you know, negotiate it or utilize coping skills and pretty much get you to a place where you can manage that crisis better, then that'll also alleviate a lot of issues that we may have out in the community.
I mean, just tremendous, tremendous work. And congratulations on the creation of that center. It's going to mean so much to the community and the surrounding communities. I can't tell you, there's so much needed during this COVID, during all these COVID times. I think it has shown a light on so many inequities. And one of those certainly has been in the area of mental health. And I'm pleased to see the work that you're doing. And so congratulations once again, Carol. You also have a new center. All the things you told us about, all the amazing things that are happening at the CDC and the Enterprise Center. And yet on top of that, a few weeks ago, you get notification of the creation of a women's business center. Tell us about that center.
Well, similar to Dr. Thomas's experience, you know, I had just written a few smaller grants and I was getting kind of tired. But I said, Dr. Lynch, you know, there's this SBA grant out here that I'm looking at, but I'm running out of steam. And she said, what? No, you're not. You're not running out of steam. Wait, we can do this. Let me see it. Send it to me. Let me see. So, of course, you know, Dr. Lynch went into full superwoman mode and Keith and we got it submitted and it was awarded. So the Small Business Administration Women's Business Center program is a 30-year-old program, and they had 136 centers across the state. And what they decided to do with this most recent round is reach out to people in underserved areas and rural areas to form new centers. And they encouraged HBCUs to apply. So now I believe there are four HBCUs who have women's business centers now. And we're one of them. And we're really excited about getting it up and running, because we've been providing business support services, and this will give us more dedicated resources to really focus in and do some hand-holding and dig deeper, plus using the tools that the Small Business Administration has. They've got great online learning platforms that are available to people, and we need to get that information into our community. Just like we need to get those Paycheck Protection Program loans, forgivable loans, into our community now, and other resources that SBA has. So we're excited, and we couldn't have done it without the Office of Sponsored Programs.
Yeah. And I think it's important to understand, you know, how, you know, we all have to work together in this. You know, it kind of begins with the Office of Sponsored Programs and research, but you're going to have dedicated faculty. And I think one of the most pleasant, I think, moments of 2020 has been the faculty and the staff and the work they've done in the middle of that. You, Dr. Thomas, was talking about, you know, being in an Anderson Center and not having many people around and still managing to continue to do the work. And that's what has happened on the campus at Winston-Salem State University, the faculty. I champion the faculty and the staff almost every single day. That said, the work that has been done at Winston-Salem State in 2020 has been some of the best work that I've been a part of in my 35 years in higher education. So hats off to you, and hats off to the two of you for the work that you've done. And hats off to you, Dr. Lynch, for the amazing leadership and encouragement that you give. The Women's Center, that's important to begin to help women develop businesses, just like Dr. Thomas's grant, and also their personnel involved, right? You get a chance to hire some people. Is that right, Carol?
Yes, we will certainly be hiring a director of the Women's Business Center, and I look forward to that. We also have another grant from the NC IDEA organization that is going to allow us to hire a business counselor. So that will actually put two full-time business counselors at on our site. And I'm happy to learn about what Dr. Thomas is doing, because I hear every day from people in the community. We have five mental health counselors in our building. Wonderful. Who are seeing, and they're growing their businesses. So they've hired counselors to work in their businesses. Then we have a nonprofit moving in soon that it works with youth who need support services. And then we have some personal care, companion care businesses in our building. So I'm sure there are people who are going to want to know all about what you're doing and embrace it. Really, so just
thank you. Let's keep in my way, or I'll come over there and visit.
Yes, absolutely. And yes,
yeah. And Dr. Lynch, take us out. We only have a couple minutes left. In terms of how do we celebrate our researchers and folks who are writing grants, and where can the community gain access to information and knowledge that comes out of these grants? I know there are forums, mm-hmm. There are opportunities for our researchers to present their research. Mm-hmm. How can the community can learn about what's happening at Winston-Salem State?
Absolutely. So I'll share how the community can learn, and then I'll talk about my favorite part, celebrating our researchers. So we have a website that is dedicated to the phenomenal research we're doing at WSSU. So it is wssu.edu. research. And so you can see all of our centers. That page is being updated constantly as we grow. So all of our centers are right there on the page. So if you have any interest, if you're a community member, have any interest in the work that our centers are doing, just click on the center and see what they're doing. In addition to that, we have four segments of the page that are dedicated to discipline-specific research. And so if you have an interest in social sciences, you want to see what we're doing in the social sciences, go ahead and click there, and you can see some of the work that's being done there and connect with our researchers. We also post when our researchers are doing great things, documentaries, radio shows, TV spots. We have links on our research page that highlights some of the work that those faculty are doing and staff. We say faculty and staff, because we've got staff who've got grants. So LaMonica Sloan Wilhelm, he's got a $1.2 million, fellowship grant, Job Corps Scholars Fellowship grant. And she's over a new appointment is in student affairs. So we have some staff who are doing great work as well that is funded. So that research website is the go-to spot to be able to check things out. And of course, our social media, we blast and celebrate our researchers and our opportunities on our social media from our phenomenal IMC staff. So if you're following those things as well, you can see it there. And following up, how do we celebrate our faculty? Well, we have reinstituted, the Sponsor Programs Award Luncheon. And last year, we did not have the physical food-based luncheon. We had a digital celebration. Chancellor Robinson, you were able to join us for that, which was an amazing celebration of our faculty and staff, our recipients. And they receive awards. So last year, LaMonica Sloan Wilhelm was our Researcher of the Year because of her $1.2 million grant. That was the largest by an individual researcher that was awarded that year. We created our first Red Jacket Society. Mm-hmm. And so surprise, Dr. Thomas, you will be inducted into the Red Jacket Society this year. Carol, you might be with 700. Carol, you might be on that induction list this year too. So everyone who receives a cumulative amount of over $1 million worth of awards gets inducted into our Red Jacket Society, and they get a nice red blazer with a nice WSSU patch and everything. And then ultimately, we'll take pictures when we can all congregate again. But we celebrate our faculty, even the faculty who aren't awarded. We have an award called the Rising Star. And so that's the faculty member who has submitted the most proposals but hasn't quite gotten funded, because it's that work that leads you to getting it funded, right? You have to start with at least submitting the proposal, getting the feedback, getting the rejection, and then picking yourself up and stop being in your feelings and doing it all over again. Because we know only 10% of federal grants get funded. So you are 1 in 10 to get funded, right? Those are the numbers. So it is a numbers game. And the more you do it, as evidenced by, Carol and Tamara, the more you do it, the better you get at it, the larger they become. I'm not gonna say the easier, but the larger they become. And so that's what we get to do. We get to celebrate our faculty every April. In that regard, and we look forward to having it again this year, Chancellor Robinson, and have you come again and share and celebrating, the faculty that we cultivate at this university.
That's great. That's fantastic. And you guys know, each one of you know that it always is a proud moment for me to find out about a new award and also find out about the great work that our faculty are doing. And so and you guys make me look good. Because of the work that you do, I'm able to go out and champion and tell folks that we need additional resources at Winston-Salem State University because we're doing all these amazing things, and the proof is right here. So I want to thank each and every one of you for joining me tonight for Future Focus. We're out of time, but it was a great show, and I'm very proud of the work that you're doing. So thank you so much, and we're going to ask all of you to join us next week for another surprise edition of Future Focus. Now, a very special Valentine's Day Future Focus next week. Tune in next week for more Future Focus Now.